Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
An average of 24 people per minute are victims of physical violence, stalking, or rape by an intimate partner in the United States. One in four women and one in seven men have been a victim of severe physical violence by an intimate partner. This is an epidemic that affects more than 12 million people every year. So for today's episode, we will be discussing a few of these stories. Today, we are honoring the victims of Benjamin Obadiah Foster and recapping episode one of Netflix's docuseries Worst Acts Ever, Dating the Devil. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Perplexity, a Mystery Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Kadra. If you're new to the show, hello and welcome. I tell tales every single week that have perplexed me. So if you love a good mystery that leaves you wanting more, don't worry, you're in the right place. And if you end up enjoying today's episode, I would love if you continue to follow along. If you are a returning listener, hello, my friends. Welcome back. I hope you're having a good holiday season. I'm happy you're here. We have a special episode today. With the holidays being in full swing, I'm taking a little bit of a break this week. I'm also getting ready for season four. I have lots of great things planned for you. So I am doing a Patreon leak. I recorded this over on Patreon over a year ago at this point, and I remastered this episode as well and added a couple things. There are some news recordings about Benjamin Foster that have been added in. So I hope you enjoy it. This story is incredibly upsetting, though, so I do want to say up top, this episode might not be for you. Take care of yourselves while listening. And the only source that I used for today's episode is Worst Acts Ever. You can watch it on Netflix. Worst Acts Ever is a docuseries. There are four episodes, and each episode covers a different case. So we're just talking about episode one, but I did recap all of these on Patreon. So if you end up wanting more, you can always go listen to those other episodes at patreon.com/perplexitymysterypodcast. Most importantly, though, before we get started, with this episode being about domestic violence, and with it being the holiday season, I want to encourage everyone to go donate, if you can, to safealliance.org. Safe Alliance provides hope and healing to those that have been impacted by domestic violence, sexual assault, and human trafficking. So if you're able to donate, I would love if you send me a message on Instagram or email me after you've done so. I would love to thank you in my next recording. I will be donating as well. And also, anyone who joins Patreon over the next couple of weeks, I will be matching your pledges in a donation to the Safe Alliance. This is also a good time to say thank you so much to everyone who listened to my Death Not Yet collaboration several months ago with Fire Eyes Media's You Should Be Here series. All of that ad revenue was just donated to Holly's House. They're at a cumulative total of over $1,100 in donations from the podcast, and that is thanks to you guys. Holly's House is a non-residential child and adult victim advocacy center. They help empower victims of intimate crime and abuse by providing support, promoting justice, and preventing violence. So if you haven't listened to You Should Be Here or checked out Holly's House, if you haven't checked out your local domestic violence centers and you are able to donate, that is an incredible cause. I understand it's tough times for a lot of people, so even just listening to You Should Be Here and leaving them a five-star rating, that ad revenue gets donated to causes like this. So that's also a great way to help. I will link all of that down below. So without further ado, let's get into this Patreon leak, the recap of episode one of Worst Acts Ever.
We're tracking an urgent manhunt this evening in Oregon. The suspect considered extremely dangerous, accused of brutally beating and kidnapping a woman who is now in critical condition. He vanished nearly a week ago now, but police warn tonight he is still active on dating apps, on social media, and they fear that he may be stalking new victims. Here's our chief national correspondent, Matt Guppin, tonight.
Tonight, the urgent manhunt underway in Oregon for the suspect accused of brutally tying up a woman and beating her. Authorities now warning he may be using online dating apps to groom victims and to get help. Police in Grants Pass say the suspect, Benjamin Foster, fled before authorities located the victim.
You've described him as extremely dangerous. Why is that?
The scene was horrific. This is a bad man that needs to be captured. We don't believe he is randomly picking people. We believe he is formulating a relationship with people.
Authorities say there is a pattern. In 2021, he was convicted of torturing a woman he held captive for 2 weeks.
They say he is likely armed and should be considered extremely dangerous. We have now learned that multiple agencies have joined in the search for him, including the FBI and the U.S. Marshals.
So this first episode, like I said, is called Dating the Devil. And they dove in immediately to the 911 call, which came from a woman named Angie. Angie is a very good friend of the victim they introduce first. The 911 call came from this little town in Oregon. It's called Grants Pass. So it's their police department. And this is a pretty recent story, January 24th, 2023. They said it made national headlines. I personally haven't heard of this story, but if you have, let me know. So you hear Angie frantic on the call, and she says, "My friend just called. I think she has to go to the hospital, but the phone went dead. So, you know, I'm really worried about her. I'm actually racing over to her house right now." But she's just filling in the police on what's going on. And so, you know, they're like, "Okay, who's your friend? What's her name? Blah, blah, blah." And this is 39-year-old Justine Siemens, and they had been friends for a decade. Angie absolutely adored Justine. So Angie's explaining all of this to dispatch as she's driving to Justine's house. This is a good friend. This is the kind of friend you want to have, especially in stories like this. It actually reminded me of the relentless badass friend. For those of you who are familiar with the Chris Watts case, the woman who was like not buying any of Chris's story and showed up to the house and was like relentlessly telling the police, relentlessly texting, calling, like immediately knew something was wrong, right? Like, this is Angie for me. So Angie gets to Justine's house, and she said that something did not feel right because Justine's doors were locked, which was not typical for her. Again, this is a small town. And 3 minutes into this episode, I was crying. So again, trigger warning, if you guys listen to this, watch this. So the next thing you hear is Angie pounding on Justine's door, but there's no answer. So she runs to the back of the house, and this is when you audibly hear Justine, like through the walls, choking and screaming. Angie hears several more banging noises, and then all of a sudden, Justine's garage door flies open. And Angie's like, "What the hell is going on?" So she runs around, sees the garage open, and she's standing face to face with Ben Foster, Justine's crazy boyfriend of a couple of months. These are Angie's words. So Angie's like, "What is happening?" Ben is like, "Justine's having a heart attack." Angie's red flags are immediately flying into the sky. She's like, "Why didn't you call an ambulance? What do you mean she's having a heart attack?" And Ben's like, "Well, why don't you go get her? And we'll take her to the hospital together." And Ben's like walking towards his car. And so Angie is like, "Whatever. Like, he's away from her. I need to go check on my friend." So she starts running towards the house, towards the source of the noise, and this is when you hear Ben speeding off in his car. So Angie would find Justine naked, covered in bruises, with a noose around her neck. There's blood everywhere. She's clearly been beaten. She's alive, but she is not responsive. Angie would tell police she knows who Ben Foster is and that this is not the first time something like this has happened. So she specifically references some issues that he's had in Vegas where he was arrested, so he had priors. Angie had just met Ben a few days before this, but Justine had been dating him for just a few months. They then introduced Lieutenant Jeff Hattersley in the documentary. He was part of the Criminal Investigations Division, and he was the lieutenant that would respond to the scene. Then they cut to an interview with this gorgeous black woman named Amber in Las Vegas, Nevada. This was one of Ben's first partners, and she talks about how she met Ben in June of 2012, so about 11 years before everything happened with Justine Siemens. Amber had been working at the same club as Ben. This is Vegas. She was a server and Ben was a bar back, and she was immediately attracted to Ben because he was smart, he was athletic, he had icy blue eyes. They did show pictures of him, and he is handsome, as horrific and disgusting of a person as he is. I can see just that initial attraction of like why she would be, you know, physically attracted to him. Ben and Amber would date about a year before moving in together. They would go on dinner dates. They went to Disney. They hung out with friends. Sometimes he'd be really sweet and leave her little notes. And their relationship just seemed normal to Amber. But looking back, she recalls that he was a bit of a lone wolf. He was kind of socially closed off, not great with connecting with other people. He also was a little jealous, nothing crazy, but a little jealous. She talked about a time that she was helping one of her ex-boyfriends who was not from the United States. He was foreign, but she wanted to help him stay in the country, and Ben would get a little upset about that. He would question her about it, and even though this ex was in a different relationship now, engaged, Ben was kind of jealous, kind of upset. And Amber basically just said, like, he really had no reason to be jealous or upset about it. But as someone who is a jealous type, you know, hearing all of this, I'm kind of like, no, I get it. I could see that. But what is not surprising about all of this is that, you know, people who are commonly jealous, it's because of a reflection of their own insecurities. And you hear this in a lot of cheating stories, that the person who's doing all the cheating is the one who is being very controlling. Ben was cheating on Amber. He was seeing other women behind her back. So then they start getting into some of his background. Ben Foster was an outdoorsman. He was into martial arts and hiking, and he had a weird obsession with various weapons. He would like collect knives and guns. He'd go to all these gun shows, and sometimes something that seemed playful at the time, but is now like very scary, he would grab some of his knives and playfully pretend, quote unquote, to slit Amber's throat. But again, there had been no major incidents, no major red flags until 2 years, two entire years into their relationship, well after they had started living together. So at this point, it's November 2014. Amber and Ben were arguing about something. Amber doesn't say what, but in her words, she was trying to push Ben's buttons, which I've definitely done before. Like, you know exactly what to say to get under your partner's skin, right? I've done that to TJ many times. Whatever she said, and I'm sure it was something very small, Ben, oh, I remember what it was. She told Ben she had thrown away a new gun that he had just got. She doesn't say if that was actually something she did. She just says, you know, I said this to get under his skin. So she may have not even done it. But his response was definitely not okay. He proceeded to push her to the ground, and then he slapped her across the face. And she basically explains that in that moment, it's like he transformed into a different person. The person she was looking at is not the person that she had knowingly been in a serious relationship with for the past 2 years. So, badass Amber knows something isn't right. She gets out of there, calls the police, gives them a statement. And the police ended up accompanying her back to the house, and they arrested Ben and they took him to jail. He was ordered to attend domestic violence counseling and perform community service, but Ben was let out of jail after just a few months because these cases, if anybody knows anything about domestic violence, they're not held very long. And as soon as he gets out, he starts stalking Amber. So it's September 2015 at this point in the episode. Amber takes immediate notice that she is being followed by Ben. She recalls this rainy day where she was just going to go hang out with some friends, go watch a football game. So she was stopping by her house for a second to get a jacket. And this was the same house that she had been living with Ben at. So she pulls into the driveway and she sees Ben outside of his car, just standing there. And Amber hasn't gotten out of her car at this point. She's just sitting in her car in the driveway. Ben approaches her. He's yelling. He's demanding that she gets out of the car. He's banging his fists on the car, like, unlock the door, unlock the door. And of course, Amber's terrified. She's like, this is my nightmare. This is like every woman's worst nightmare. She asks him to leave, and he does. He speeds off. And she waited in her car for 15 entire minutes before going inside the house. So she gets inside, she goes to the closet, she's grabbing her jacket, but then she feels somebody grabbing her by the hair. And Ben has now gone into her house without permission, and he's assaulting her, forcing her to the ground. And he began attacking her with a knife. She had significant defensive wounds on her hand. He then dragged her to the garage and began to beat her. And eventually, he gets up. He kind of leaves. He's like cooling off or whatever. And again, Amber being a badass, she knows that he could kill her any second. She knows time is of the essence. So she takes this opportunity. She rushes out quickly, hits the garage door button. She said that she was injured so badly, she was having to crawl outside. So she crawls outside into the rain. She's covered in blood. And eventually she gets to the leasing office and the police are called again. And what's so wild about this is Ben didn't flee. He stayed there. It's like he has this superiority complex, or maybe he's like a narcissist where he just doesn't think that he can ever be caught for doing stuff like this, you know? But the police show up, and between the time of her crawling and getting help and him leaving and the police being called, when they get there, everything's cleaned up. He has also cut his own face and lied and told police that Amber started the fight. She attacked him and he was just defending himself. Like a scene out of a freaking horror movie, police then put handcuffs on Amber. She's covered in blood, there's defensive wounds all over her, and they're taking her to jail. She stayed in jail for 18 hours. Meanwhile, the officers didn't even look up Ben's record, but eventually the judge assigned to the case, a female judge, mind you, I would like to point that out, digs up Ben's priors and dismisses legal charges against Amber. Trauma was added to this entire situation because the police did not handle this properly. They didn't look at the evidence properly. They immediately just believed Ben. It's like, it's just common sense. There's two sides to every story. And also the evidence didn't even support what he was saying, whether he cleaned up or not. Like, you can see these injuries all over this woman. Be so for real. So Amber gets home and she finds all of her belongings are gone. Her clothes, her underwear, her birth certificate, her social security card, everything was gone. Ben had stolen it. They really don't touch on this again in the episode. If she had to like file another police report for all of her missing things, like how that played out. But Amber clearly went through it, right? And she wouldn't be the only one. So the next victim they talk to is a woman named Jamie. She had met Ben in 2017, so just a few years after all of this happened with Amber. She has this absolutely adorable Shih Tzu dog that is with her in the documentary. She also had the Shih Tzu at the time that she was casually dating Ben. The Shih Tzu has like dyed red hair. Her name is Maya. She's just super, super cute. And she comes up a lot during the story. So that's why I wanted to introduce her. Part of what initially attracted Jamie to Ben is that Ben really loved her dog, Maya. He was super sweet to her. He would buy her all kinds of cute little toys and gifts. He played with her all the time. And Jamie and Ben also had mutual interests. They met during a Krav Maga, a mixed martial arts class. Jamie also talked about how Ben just seemed very normal, very what she called straight edge. He didn't do drugs. He didn't really drink. He also had plans to get into law enforcement. Thank God that didn't happen, because this man is extremely dangerous. Their relationship was very open, very casual. He was seeing other people. It seemed like she was too. And meanwhile, while he is dating Jamie and these other women, he's continuing to harass Amber. He's sending her all these texts, trying to call her, reach out over and over. Amber recalls how he sent her this very long text in 2017. Saying that he had been seeing a therapist and he wants to make amends, get closure. He just has so much remorse for what he did. Amber, seeing the good in people, knowing that she had this seemingly healthy, normal relationship with him for 2 years, wanting to just be a good person and move on, she agreed to meet him at a public place. They meet at a restaurant. The whole time, he's very apologetic. He said he believed Amber was the love of his life and he messed it all up. He just feels so awful. And to Amber, Ben came across very genuine. She said she even felt bad for him. So they started hanging out again, texting as friends, and soon it was Christmas time. So Amber recalls the specific situation, Christmas Eve 2017, when Ben was hanging out at Amber's house. Amber went to her room to change, and she had her phone out on the table. They don't really explain this, but I'm assuming he looked through her phone and saw, like, whatever, and just went into a rage, because the next thing she knows, Ben has come into her room where she was changing, and he starts strangling her. He strangled her until she was unconscious, and when she woke up, Ben was punching her walls, going insane, just ransacking the place. So once again, Amber sees this moment where she's like, I have to leave right now. I can't believe this is happening again. This is her words. So she jumps from her first floor balcony, flags down the first car she sees, and she gets help. Police come out again. Amber recalled an officer literally grabbing her by the shoulders and shaking her, telling her, you cannot see this person anymore. He will kill you. He could have taken you away from your family. Ben went to jail again. The state pressed charges on Amber's behalf, but without shock, this is a domestic violence case. There's no sense of urgency. A trial hasn't happened. A trial is taking forever. At this point, it's 2018. He's continuing to see various women. He's seeing Jamie. For whatever reason, Ben loses his job. So he naturally starts struggling to pay bills. Jamie, being a good person and this being casual, she's like, hey, we get along. Why don't you move in with me? I don't mind helping you out. But Ben is a little mooch, a little lazy mooch. He's laying in bed. He's showing signs of depression, anxiety. He is not making any type of effort to get a job. And again, Jamie is super chill. She's like, look, I understand this sucks. I'm here for you. I don't mind helping you, but you can't carry on like this forever. Like, you need to get a job. So one day she's just trying to reason with him, just have a conversation. And this was the first time that Ben put his hands on Jamie. He grabs her, slams her on the ground. He also was showing a lot of signs of paranoia. He was telling Jamie He believed people were following him. People were out to get him. Over the course of the next several weeks, Ben would attack Jamie several more times, and each time it became increasingly more violent. But Jamie felt very trapped. She didn't tell the police. She didn't tell her friends. She felt embarrassed and isolated, as is very common with victims of domestic violence. I can personally attest to that. I never reported anything that happened to me, largely because for me, none of it was physical. So it's like, what are the police gonna do? You know, like, he's punching the walls. He threw some things off the balcony, but he never hurt me. He made verbal threats. Also, I was like very young, like early 20s. I didn't know what could be done, you know, and really didn't have much faith in the justice system. I can't say I have much more faith now. So all of that to say, I understand where Jamie's coming from, for sure. September 16th, 2019, Jamie filed a restraining order. Good for her. She did more than I ever did. She had been staying in a hotel while Ben stayed at her place. So police go to serve the restraining order, and she's like, thank God I can finally get back into my place. I can get my belongings. I can get the things that I need to go to work. But Ben, you know, police are knocking to serve this restraining order, and Ben's not answering. He's probably laying in bed, refusing to answer the door. So Jamie's like, well, can you guys escort me inside so I can at least get my belongings? And they're like, no, we don't do that. Sorry. So they just literally drop the paper off at the door and leave. Just are like, you know, good luck with that. And obviously she's like, well, what the heck am I supposed to do? Like, I can't go into the apartment. He's going to hurt me. So she kind of sits outside of her apartment for hours, again, feeling very alone, not really thinking through it fully of like, I could call a friend. I could have someone go with me. I could do this, that. Again, very normal for a situation like this. So she's sitting outside of her apartment for hours. She's realizing, you know, I can't afford to stay at a hotel. She's again feeling very alone in this. So she's like, I have nowhere else to go. So she walks back inside of her apartment. She went straight into her room and went to sleep. Jamie wakes up to Ben sitting on top of her, restraining her. He's like forcing her arms back behind her head with his hands. He's doing this with one hand, and the other hand he has head clippers, like an electric shaver. And he turns it on. And he's like, no man will ever look at you again. No man will ever find you beautiful. And he shaves her head bald. I was speechless at this point. The levels of just detachment from reality and the level of evil that it would take for this to even go through someone's mind is just insane to me.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. I'm going to shave her head bald so that no man ever looks at her. No man ever finds her beautiful. What the hell is wrong with you? So Jamie is laying there quiet. She's not giving him any sign of emotion because she knows there's nothing she can do and he will probably kill her. She stayed in the apartment and he held her hostage for weeks. When she would sleep, he would tie her up or he would hold a gun to her head. He stripped her naked so that she couldn't hide anything. He took her phone from her. And meanwhile, he's making all these threats that he's going to kill her. He held her captive for 16 days. And during this time, he also attacked her. He maxed out her credit cards. And because she was held hostage there for weeks, it got to the point where they eventually were running out of food and water, and she knew that she had to go to the grocery store. She also knew that if Ben loved one thing, it was her dog, Maya. So she's like, hey, Maya is out of food. I need to go get her food. So he's like, okay, fine. Let's go to the store. He made her drive because Lord knows this man doesn't have a car and he ain't paying for gas. So they get in the car. They go to this little store. She parks and he's like, I'm going to take Maya for a walk. And so she's like, oh my God, this is the time I have to leave. So he's out walking Maya. She sees this as the time to get help. So she flees and flags down the first car she sees, gets help from a man who takes her to a hospital. She was treated for 7 broken ribs, black eyes. She had cauliflower ears, like boxers get from being beat on the side of the head so many times. She had damage to both of her eyes, and he had burned her with lye. A nurse would, of course, call police after seeing all of these injuries. And so an officer shows up and starts talking to Jamie. There's body cam footage of this. But Jamie, like a lot of victims of abuse, she's very, very terrified. She's just been kidnapped. She's been held hostage. This guy said he was going to kill her. She's like, if I tell police who this person is and they arrest him, they're not going to be able to hold him very long. And when he gets out, he is going to come and kill me. So she's like fighting with herself. She's like, what do I tell them? How can I protect myself? Later that night, she was released from the hospital and a SWAT officer drove her home. They got a search warrant for the house and they arrested Ben. Her place was swarming with cops when she got there. He holed himself up in the apartment for hours, refusing to come out. But eventually, I think they said they like blew out the windows. He came out holding her dog, Maya, thank God, unharmed. So the police get the dog, bring Maya to Jamie, and they take Ben to jail. Amber, meanwhile, would see Ben's face plastered all over the news. And she sees, arrested for kidnapping in the first degree, substantial bodily harm, force or threat of force, assault with use of a deadly weapon, battery, domestic battery by strangulation. And she's like, oh my God, I escaped by the skin of my teeth. I was right. Everything I believed was valid. Like, Ben absolutely would have killed me. He is so dangerous. And now this is happening to another person. So, of course, with all of these charges, there's going to be a trial. I mean, this is very, very escalated. Jamie was scared to deal with a trial. She didn't want to have to sit in a room with Ben. She didn't want to relive this trauma. And what's very frustrating about this is, like, the DA and the police had plenty of evidence. They had hundreds of pictures. They had statements. So Jamie's whole argument was basically like, there was no need for me to be at this trial. They had plenty of evidence to convict him without me being there, which I agree. I mean, there's definitely times where they can testify on the victim's behalf. So that could have been done. But of course, they didn't do that. The Clark County District Attorney combined the cases of Amber from 2017 and Jamie from 2019, and the DA cut Ben a deal. They cut this guy a deal. He was sentenced to a maximum of 30 months and given 2 years time served. This man attempted to murder 2 women and he's being released. He's walking. October 2021. So just about 2 years before everything that would happen with Justine Siemens. 36-year-old Ben would relocate to this little town, Grants Pass, in Oregon, where he would meet Justine. So flashing back to where the documentary begins, or really flashing forward in this timeline, January 24th, 2023, Justine has been rushed to the hospital. She's in very bad shape, and she falls into a coma. Her airway also was not stable, because remember, he had a noose around her neck. You could hear her choking. So her airway had collapsed and she had to be intubated. The medical staff is like, I don't know. This is not looking good. I don't know if she's going to make it. Justine, Angie recalls, was very fun, full of life, talented. She was a bartender. And when Ben had fled the scene, there's this ongoing manhunt. There's actually video of police wrongfully handcuffing a man who fit Ben's physical description, and they're like interrogating him. Then they let him go when they realize it's not Ben. Which, side note, happens more than you would think. I actually had this happen to my friend's older sister. She was riding in a car with her fiance. The car, I believe it was, fit the description of a car that had just been used in a major crime. And so all these police pulled them over, guns drawn, and like demanded they get out of the car. They're like putting them on the ground. And thank God, none of them were harmed. And they eventually realized it wasn't the right people, but so freaking scary. So Ben is out somewhere and the police are like, this guy is really freaking dangerous. So the U.S. Marshals get involved in the search. Ben had actually grown up in Grants Pass, Oregon. So at first I thought he was just like fleeing, kind of going to a small town, trying to like hide a little below the radar, you know, because he hasn't, like, he's out free at this point, but he's, you know, starting a new life, whatever. But turns out he had a lot of family here. He had people who could help him because it seems to, again, be my understanding that he was struggling to make money. So he basically was back living with family, is my understanding. But now he has just tried to murder someone. So he's fleeing. His parents were interviewed by police. They were very cooperative. They basically told police that Ben had just shown up like the day before, quote unquote, in a whirlwind, and he had taken a bunch of his belongings and left. They also talk about his quote-unquote incidents in Vegas, so they were familiar with all of that. The parents just basically gave any information they could. You can kind of hear the mom, like, crying. She's like, I don't understand why he's like this. What's going on? Thursday, January 26th, 2023, police get a tip that Ben Foster is in the Sunny Valley area, northern Oregon. Police would survey the area and they find Ben. He has changed his appearance. He shaved his head. He had a rat ponytail before. That's the description that Angie gave. He had an ugly rat ponytail, I think is what she says. But he has shaved his head and he is at a house belonging to a woman named Tina Jones, who would later be identified as a family friend. She's like this older woman. Tina's dogs take notice to the police hiding out in the trees and they start barking. So this alerts Ben, something's up. And again, he's also very paranoid. So I'm sure the second he heard a dog barking, he's like, they're after me. So he comes out with binoculars and eventually he sees the police and takes off running. So naturally, the police are running after him, but they lose his trail eventually. They end up like at a road and they can't find him. Also, Ben, you know, is from here. He's very familiar with this heavily wooded, remote area, so it wouldn't take much for him to get away. Police end up searching Tina Jones's house. They find Ben's wallet with his ID. They find what they call a go bag, so it has a bunch of clothes. He had multiple cell phones as well, 3 cell phones. That's never something you want to see. And they were all wrapped in tinfoil, along with other electronics. He had like a laptop that was wrapped in tinfoil. So police again talk about his paranoia and just trying to do everything he can to not be traced. Police would find he had made multiple dating app accounts. They start to theorize that he is either getting future victims through these dating apps and or meeting people through these dating apps and just trying to get money from them, get help so that he can flee. So the media is alerted nationally at this point. Jamie eventually gets a phone call from Ben's brother and he warns her, hey, Ben is out on the run. He just did this to another girl. I'm so sorry that I didn't believe you when everything was happening to you. So Jamie is, of course, super scared. She's like, oh my gosh, is he going to come back here? And Amber had similar fears. After Ben was on the run for 7 days, police received another tip. A guy had called a taxi company in the area requesting a ride. His name was Richard Barron. And Richard was a friend and neighbor of Tina Jones. He had been taking care of Tina's dogs because police had actually arrested Tina. They suspected she had been harboring Ben. So she was like in jail and was like, hey, I need somebody to take care of my dogs. But because this was a tiny town, when this person called the taxi cab driver, the driver knew who Richard Barron was. And he immediately was like, whoever this is on the phone is much younger than Richard Barron. And he had heard about the manhunt for Ben, so he actually declined the ride and he called police. So not long after this, police show up to the home of Richard Barron. Richard Barron, and I guess he was old enough to have a caretaker. He had this caretaker named Donald Griffith. Police go into this man's home. Richard and Donald are both dead in the living room. I don't know why, but I did not see that coming. They were both on the ground, clearly violently murdered. Police suspected that Ben had broken in and was trying to use their house to hide out in and got so paranoid that he killed both of them. Both bodies were also covered in wood pellets and the wood pellet stove was turned on. The house also had a strong smell of gasoline, so he was probably counting on destroying the evidence, but he's stupid and that didn't work. Another cab company had driven somebody around the same time period, matching Ben's physical description, and he would say he drove this person into the town. And he was spotted walking a small white dog just down the street from where Justine Siemens lived. So at this point, police are pretty confident he is hiding out at his latest victim's house. He has gone back to the scene of the crime. So they go to Justine's house. They bring tanks. They're throwing chemicals into the house. Nothing. After hours, they get a search warrant and they came in with canine units, drones, but they cannot find this man anywhere. He's not in the house. But eventually, one of the police dogs, sniffing around, finds this tiny access area beneath the home and starts to bark. He alerts police someone is hiding under the house like a freaking creep. So police use a robot to shoot pepper balls into the basement crawl space type area. And this robot also had a camera on it. So they see Ben is down there. He's laying down on the ground and they take notice that Ben has a gun on him. And of course, he's already killed two people. This is a very intense situation. Oh my gosh, this part's so frustrating. So at this point, police hear the sound of a gunshot ring out. And then they're using their little robot camera and they're like, oh my gosh, Ben just shot himself. He would die in the hospital shortly after he had completed suicide.
Which is the 24th of January. We responded to the residents on Sheen Way to where we found a resident of Grants Pass bound and severely beaten. That sparked off an intensive manhunt over the last several days. We have worked around the clock to capture Benjamin Foster.
Very near the location where Mr. Foster was initially holed up on Thursday night, we discovered a double homicide scene.
Several law enforcement agencies were in the area conducting welfare checks when, through an open window, they were able to observe what appeared to be scenes of a crime. They were able to make entry into that residence, and inside they located two deceased victims of what we believe to be homicidal violence. That's Richard Lee Barron and Donald Owen Griffith. We have no outstanding suspects in relation to the deaths of Mr. Barron and Griffith. We believe that those are related to Benjamin Foster, and at this time we're confirming our suspicions as the investigation goes on. My understanding is that we believe blunt force trauma was the means used in this, and it's a brutal scene.
You can imagine the fear and the concern that came across your chief of police and every single law enforcement professional. When we learned this happened, we immediately activated our SWAT team. We immediately reached out to all of our colleagues and partners to deploy people to the residence immediately. While we're deploying teams to secure the residence, we also have to take into account what this man just did. He brutally murdered two innocents in Sunny Valley, and we didn't know when he was going to stop. After a lengthy standoff and failed communication, he did not want to communicate with police. We located him burrowed deep underneath the home. We knew he was armed and dangerous, so you can imagine the safety of not only the community, but the law enforcement professionals that were out there was our top priority. We had to be incredibly careful. We anticipated a gunfight at the end, and that's not what happened. At the end, throughout this entire process, Foster took his own life with what appears to be a single gunshot wound to the head with a .45 caliber weapon. And as far as the relationship with our victim, who, by the way, is still in critical yet stable condition at a local hospital, it's a former domestic relationship. Former.
So they have broken up.
I'm just going to say it's a former domestic relationship. I am not releasing her name, nor do I want to release her name. I want to protect the rights of the survivor in this case, who has a long way to battle herself toward recovery.
Ryan Seacrest here. So every great barbecue takes a little patience. And while the food does its thing, you can enjoy a little Chumba Casino. The perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Angie, Justine's friend, would later say, people have said Ben took the easy way out, but she feels he's burning in hell where he belongs. And I really appreciated her saying that because at first, when he completed suicide, I was like screaming at the TV. I was like, are you kidding me? This is so frustrating. All these things these women have been put through, the justice system, in my opinion, failing them, and all of it to end with this piece of shit taking the easy way out. But she's right. I mean, I believe in karma, so I like to believe this man is burning in hell where he belongs, if that's any consolation. Also, this story does have somewhat of a happy ending because of tenacious, badass women. Because of people like Angie, there were survivors in this. You know, Amber survived, Jamie survived, they went on to live these full lives. Justine Siemens also survived, Angie's friend. This is when they interview Justine, and I was crying at this point. I'm trying not to cry again right now, sorry. I'm not gonna cry. Okay. So Justine shares her story. She's talking about how she had been dating Ben casually for a few months. She said he had been nothing but nice to her, but one day he came over to Angie's house and he started asking for clean urine, saying he had to pass a urinalysis test. And Justine was like, you know, something's up. He's not looking for a job. Why would Ben need clean urine? It has to be something with the law. Because Justine is smart, she Googles his ass. And this is when she finds out about all of his criminal history in Vegas. Remember, Justine met Ben because they worked at the same club. So Justine is like, this man should not be around people. So she tells her boss, he gets fired. Ben knew that Justine was responsible for him losing his job. He's pissed, and she stopped hanging out with him. So he is stewing in this rage for weeks. So about a month later, Justine comes home one day. Ben is hiding out in her garage. And this is when he attacked her. He's screaming at her about how he got fired because of her. And he held her captive for 3 days, very similar to what he did to Jamie. He beat Justine so badly, she has permanent traumatic brain damage. Justine has absolutely no doubt that the only reason she is alive is because of Angie. Justine has gone back to bartending. She's made a nearly full recovery. but she had significant muscle disuse atrophy. She had to relearn how to walk. She had to get her teeth done because Ben had punched her teeth out. And they talk about how the justice system did a great disservice. If the other victims' stories had been taken more seriously, they could have gotten justice sooner and better justice. They could have also gotten to Justine quicker. They could have protected her. And the two men that were killed, Richard Barron, Donald Griffith, that could have been avoided. I also think it's quite telling that they say in the documentary, the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department and the Clark County District Attorney declined to be interviewed for this documentary. Amber looks at her time with Ben as a learning experience. It reminded me a lot about how I view my domestic violence experience. This is just my personal opinion. But she talks about how she feels the situation taught her things to look for in future relationships. She also feels at peace knowing Ben is gone and she doesn't have to look over her shoulder anymore. They then ended the episode by saying, if you or someone you know has experienced domestic abuse, information and resources are available at wantotalkaboutit.com. And I just want to say, these are some of the worst situations that a human being can ever be in, and they feel incredibly isolating. These monsters, these abusers, they intentionally make you feel like you don't have anyone. And I don't know who's going to listen to this, but I just want everybody to remember, because if you're not going through this, you might know somebody who is. You have to be there for those people and remind them that they're not alone, no matter how much they have been programmed to believe that they are. There's always somebody who can help, and there's also, you know, programs that help people be protected and get out of these situations. Resources are available at wantotalkaboutit.com, but be there for your friends, your family, check in on them, be advocates for them. It feels very helpless when you are a victim in situations like this. So that wrapped up episode one of Worst Ex Ever, Dating the Devil. I know that was a heavy story, but obviously very important to tell. And like Angie said, Ben is burning in hell where he belongs. I do love this story in the sense that, like, these women, they're very beautiful, they're very strong, they're very independent. For a woman to be the one to save Justine, and then also a female judge being the reason Amber's criminal charges were dropped, because those stupid police officers believed Ben's story, that she started that altercation, like, it's just crazy. Let me know what y'all are thinking about this documentary in the comments down below, or if you've heard of this story. Also, if there's other documentaries you want me to cover, always open to those requests, so drop those down below. And we will get into episode two, Betrayed by the Badge, next week. Thank you guys so much for listening to this documentary recap and Patreon leak. I hope you enjoyed it. If you enjoyed the way this story was told, be sure to let me know. If you're watching on YouTube, you can drop a comment down below and like this video, share it with somebody. If you're listening on Spotify, you can also leave a comment on this exact episode, letting me know your thoughts. I'm also curious if any of you had heard of Benjamin Obadiah Foster or if you watched Worst Ex Ever. I found the series to be very insane. Like I said, each episode is a different case, and all of those cases are just absolutely wild. Just a reminder, season four of Perplexity is happening soon. So I want to know what you guys want for season four. Please drop those requests. And remember, if you are able to donate to safealliance.org, that is amazing. You can send me a message if you like. I'd love to thank you in my next recording. So all of those links for You Should Be Here and Safe Alliance will be down in the show notes. You all are amazing. I hope you have a great week. Please stay safe. And I will talk to you next week. I do want to let you guys know next week will be another kind of like rewind episode. It's going to be a Christmas marathon. I'm putting together a bunch of old Christmas episodes from the past, remastering them and putting them into one big long episode. After that, when we get to the very end of December, I will have some new content for you guys. Just please be patient with me. I really have needed some extra time to catch up on things, but still putting some things out for you that I think you'll enjoy. And I will talk to you guys soon. Bye.
Perplexity, a Mystery Podcast, is hosted, written, and produced by me, Kadra Brannon. This show is proud to be a part of the Black Cat Network. Assistant editor is Charlie Leopold. Assistant producer is TJ McRae. Theme song by Patrick Thompson. Music for this episode is from Pixabay. If you enjoyed today's episode, leave a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. If you have a story to share or a topic request, email perplexitymysterypodcast@gmail.com. Contact, support, and merch links can be found in the episode description. And you can always unlock early and ad-free episodes and exclusive bonus content by joining the Perplexed Society at patreon.com/perplexitymysterypodcast. Until next week, stay curious.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21+. Terms and conditions apply.